It's the return of the king. The return of the king on me.
How's everybody doing?
Doing well, buddy.
Got my jacket on.
Look at you, looking all sharp.
Yes, sir. Look good, man.
Oh, where'd you get that? That's nice.
Yeah, me and Bill, we're twins.
We're twins.
Azure Migration High School, is that what it says?
Flight school, yeah. Azure Migration High.
That's nice, Migration High School.
It's really, it's a GED program.
We're going to do a Disney program.
It's an equivalency program, yeah. Not even a real high school. Yeah.
It's a musical.
Yeah.
I love musicals. I absolutely love them. Have you ever watched one of the first musicals that was done to film? The whole thing was done as a musical. The Umbrellas of Schomburg. Have you ever watched that movie?
Oh,
yeah.
It's pretty fascinating. It's French, and it was the first movie done as a musical. And they went all in. You know, like some musicals, you know, there's sub talking and then there's the breaking onto song. Right. No, not this one. This one
it's all music.
I'm going to go and open the door right now.
That's hard to do. There's not very many musicals.
The whole thing.
That can go that far. Move my camera.
Please take out the garbage.
I'm walking across the room now.
Yep.
Fascinating.
Anyways, fun fact. So, you know, go and look at your Netflix or whatever you use for your movie streaming. Umbrellas of Schomburg. Catherine Deneuve was in it. Yeah.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
Schomburg is a suburb of Chicago.
Oh.
Yep. Okay. It sure was.
Okay.
Yeah.
I did not know that. Fun fact.
Yeah.
I think this was a city in Paris.
I was going to say, I bet it's a town in France, too.
No. We created it first.
First.
We have our own first. Here in Indiana. Sorry. It's quite embarrassing. So there is a Versailles, Indiana, but it's not pronounced Versailles.
Oh, no. How is it pronounced?
They pronounced it Versailles. It's pronounced Versailles, Indiana.
Really? Oh, interesting. Okay. All right. It's like Paris, Texas.
Yes, indeed. Glorious Perry, Texas. Well, hey, folks, on that note, maybe we should get a little bit serious. This is terrific. We're kind of coming in on part three of our really fun Lord of the Rings series, Lord of the Token Rings. How did I mess that up already? Kevin, I don't even know how we got there to Lord of the Token Rings. That was me.
I don't know either,
myself.
But I love it. I love it.
I know.
We're way
You're
past
stuck
token
with it
rings
now,
at
Kevin.
This point in networking,
oh,
for sure.
My gosh, aren't we? Yeah, way past it. Let's throw the ring into the volcano. I think the first two parts were fascinating. You know, Kevin, we were talking earlier. I like what you said, right? We kind of did a little bit of an overview and then peeled back the onion a little bit more in the second part. Really setting up a lot of the concepts and things like that by bringing on Bruce and Abby. And so Bruce and Abby are back. And Kevin, I'm kind of excited to have the three of you back for this conversation. I know Shelley is too.
Yes, I am very excited because this time we're going to make it real. You know, I love the fact that we're going to go through some specific examples and really get into the meat of it.
Yeah. What works, what doesn't work.
Perfect. So just a quick thing. You know, a few things that I think we like to talk about every time that we talk about security and whether that's, you know, on the wire networking security or whether it's, you know, on your boxes or however you define it. The first thing that we like to talk about all the time and I mention to people is to talk about it early. It can't be too early in your process to start to get the people together. To you know, listen to episodes 1 and 2 of this podcast of you know the Token Rings package, and you know start to think about you know what should you be considering, what should you be you know planning for, and then to engage the right people to start to have those conversations internally. Well, you know if you're a customer. Start to grab your networking team, start to grab your cyber team, you know, get everybody together, agree on sort of the tenets of what you want to do. the goals, you know, what are you looking to block? What are you looking to secure? And, you know, how do you envision going about that? Because that is super important in the process. So anything you're going to do in Azure, we're going to have offers for you pretty much of, you know, hey, we could do it this way, we could do it that way. But it's always important to know, like, what it is that you want to do first, and, you know, the different components to it, and understand, you know, your topology and those types of things. So once you get all that together, then you're going to start going through the process and kind of hitting on the things that Bruce and Abhi are going to talk about today. So they're going to share with us some of the things that worked really well and some of the things that don't work really well. You know, out in the field that they've experienced, you know, as they've been doing this for a number of years. So listening to their expertise should then help you as you're planning this earlier on to say, okay, I could do this, or I don't need to do that. Let me engage this person. Let me make sure we have that person. But honestly, the biggest takeaway I would like you to have is talk about it early, talk about it often, and have your plan together. And so, depending on where we want to start, do we want to, you know, go like do one good thing, one bad thing?
I think you're setting us up for the good, the bad, and the ugly.
There you go. Yeah.
No, you went off on a different path, a different movie
a little
path.
Western music. And yeah. We're good. Yeah.
Spaghetti Westerns.
Wah, wah, wah.
I'll talk.
Well, let's start with the good. Let's start okay. with
yeah.
the
good.
So, all right.
Yeah, I'll talk a little bit about the good side. So just reminders, this is Bruce. I'm glad to be back again with you all as well. It means I did my job in the last one, maybe.
You did. Big time. Good job. Good job, Bruce.
Awesome. So, you know, there's phases to think about. And if we're going to kind of do this recipe book, this cookbook style, there is a cloud adoption framework that you can look at offline for, you know, a lot of the things I'm going to talk about here. But step one is assess where you are. Where are you at today in your journey? Are you already in Azure? Obviously, you're about to move to Azure. So you really need to figure out, you know, where are you? To do that, we have solution assessments to help kind of give you a maturity rating or a maturity scale on the things that you need to consider. Because the key input of where you're going to start are your requirements. And you don't necessarily have to have a 5,000-page document of requirements to do that. I've seen customers do that. It works. It's, you know, a painful slog through a set of requirements. The best way that I've seen this work, and I just did this recently. I went to a customer in North Carolina where we were whiteboarding this solution. And as we drew pictures of parts and pieces of what needs to be included in the design, both from a network, you know, pipes and plumbing and the flows and the data plane to a security overlay, we can draw that and everybody visually in the room can get there. And in that room, we had the security folks, and the security folks were saying, nope, That's not good. We can't do that. That's not going to pass our InfoSec review. Then we can, you know, take a pause. And on the whiteboard, we will have sections for, you know, what we call like key next steps, major blockers, and another section that we call key guiding principles. And those guiding principles kind of set the architecture flow for how you're going to create that whiteboarding view. So for example, a key guiding principle might be, we're going to be all Azure native. Okay, let's remember that principle when we're drawing on the whiteboard and we say we're going to use this product. How do we keep that principle in mind as we draw this flow? And that's how you kind of just, you know, start the process off. I'll kind of pause there and see if Abhi wants to talk about what you don't do during that process. But that's how you kick it off.
All right, like that.
I think we're going to go to the other extreme now.
So the corollary to that is not defining the requirements. So often what happens is what I call is buying into the hype. So a lot of these analysts, and there is no take on any particular company, but a lot of these analysts produce reports, right? Those reports are not production ready.
like as Bruce talked about, right? This report looks fancy. It has all these new verbiage or recycled jargon, and it doesn't fit the bill. But some executive bought the hype, right?
Yeah.
And they bought into the hype, and now starts the backfitting. And often you get into the questions where, show me what. So here's an example. I'll give you a real example. This customer, this is a broker dealer. This broker dealer, huge AWS presence, SODA GCP presence, has Azure as well, so multi cloud, right? And we got into the conversation, and we started instead of use cases, they said like, no, that's not what I want to talk about. Show me what you can find on AWS. Oh. You think about yourself, like, what do you mean? Like, what do you want to find on AWS? Like, what yeah. are, rather than asking the question, how will you do X, right? Because the solution we are talking about, A, it's a solution. It's not a tool. That's one. Second thing, it might not be the right solution. Like, it might be the case that what you're looking for fits in the ecosystem in some other place. Right? Like, it might be a Entra that might solve your problem. It might be a Purview that might solve your problem. It might look like that. I can show you, a good example is data security. A lot of people are asking about sensitive data, right? Show me sensitive data. CSPM can do it. Defender for Cloud can do it. But you might have but that question might be coming from the governance side, where they want to find the data and then they want to put the policies on it, because for many different reasons. Defender for CSPM is not the right solution for it. Even though it can do it for you, I can show you the data, but I'm not going to solve your use case. So, you know what I mean? And so it's a hype cycle.
Yeah.
Freaking somebody about hype cycle. And because everybody else does it, I need to do it too. Right. Okay. So, so I'll stop there.
That's exactly right, Avi. And that's part of making it real is, you know, keep the customer, you know, within the boundaries of solution reality, and don't jump on products just because they exist. We saw that, you know, with Kubernetes a lot, when people were building Kubernetes clusters just because they could, and that's way outside the scope of networking. But, you know, we see this inside of networking as well. What we want to do is focus the story on the reality, because one of the things that I've seen very frequently get out of control is, well, let's design this for every single thing that we might have come in from an application perspective. So we might need data flows to go this way. We might need them to go egress through a firewall. We might need them to go externally through our express route, and, you know, back out from our on-premise. And you know, you got to back them up and ask, wait a minute, what are going to be the needs of your organization from a centralization perspective for the workloads that you're planning in the immediate future? Because you can always expand this later. Don't get into analysis paralysis with the 1 million different areas that might come up.
The what ifs.
Yeah. The what ifs. We can what if this for the next 16 years. Let's focus on the flow that we have to define today to make sure that we have egress, because egress is critical, and egress has to be inspected, it has to be controlled, and it has to have certification. Let's make sure we have ingress, right? And let's standardize that pattern, that you can replicate it worldwide so you can scale. But let's not what if this to death. And that focus is really important from a consultative perspective when you're in front of the whiteboard, when you're drawing with a customer, when you're trying to hash out those requirements and turn them into reality in a picture that's actually usable, that they can take to a governance board, and a governance board understands it, says, check, I see where the control points are.
So it sounds like definitely a balance between building in for scalability, but then also not making it so complex that it becomes unwieldy. You're building unnecessary components into it that you will never use.
The picture has to be simple. If it's if it's too complex for, you know, the architects in the room to understand, they can't relay it up the chain, right? They're going to get confused. And it's going to get more and more confused like grapevine within the organization. So you have to make these very simple. You have to make them very explicit. And you have to have very specific instructions for how it's going to be used.
So, Abhi, in the example that you were going through, you were probably calling on a couple of different customers. How did you get it to turn around? How did you convince them to focus?
I'll give you a strategic answer and I'll give you a tactical answer. The strategic answer on that one was you need to have the right stakeholders into the picture. Rather than fighting with a whole army of people, you rationale with the people who matter, who can make the actual decision makers, right? And get them on board, and then you move from there. So strategically speaking, that's the way you do it, that we did. The tactical answer is, if you look at Defender for Cloud, because everybody in security is talking about risk, because that's what we do, right? We don't do stuff just because we want to do stuff. It's because we want to do it for a specific reason. What is that reason? Is because we are worried about the exposure that will happen if you do what you are trying to do or what you're not trying to do, whatever. So the tactical answer here is Defender for Cloud, the way it's written, it shows you the risks that exist in your environment very clearly. And those are objective, right? Because it's telling you right now, it's looking at your environment, it's looking at the configuration that are there, and it's showing you that you have an exposure, and here is why you have an exposure, and here is what you can do about it. So you can immediately pivot and say, look, okay, fine, I get it. You have the hype cycle, but have you thought about how this database that has a PII in it and is exposed to the world is going to get popped? Yes, I can show you a million other things, fancy dashboards and whatnot, but do you want that or do you want to fix this first? And then the conversation automatically pivots.
Yeah, databases become very complex because those are hosting all of your, you know, PII and confidential data. And that has to be kind of your protected fortress, right? Kind of in the back of the solution. But you have to be able to access it. You have to be able to get to it through private means or potentially public means. And what services need to be enabled in front of it to protect that fortress, that domain, that there is allowed entry, but the policies and controls are there to protect that, you know, that domain. And that's where you get into the meat and sauce of kind of figuring out what this architecture flow looks like, right? Because in order to build that picture, you have to know exactly what those components are. You have to know what those policies are that need to be in place of data access. And you have to know how to put, you know, the database behind a protected perimeter so that it's not directly accessible. And then get all the different parts of the organization to agree with that approach.
And, you know, one of the things that sticks out as you all are talking is, and I think it could be a little bit different from other workloads or other things that, you know, customer does. A lot of times you'll stand up a workload and it's there, it's kind of done. You know, you don't do much with it or to it unless you need an update or, you know, some other things you kind of tweak. But like kind of once you build it, in a lot of other cases, it's done. And I think that's one of the things that we want people to do and to understand is that, number one, security is everybody's responsibility. You don't just get engaged at the beginning and like give your opinion and then boom, you know, you're on your way. You are a stakeholder, you know, within that. So as things change within your database environment or within your virtual environment or anything, you have to ensure that your security owners, you know, your cyber team, your network team, that they know, like, hey, this is changing. And everybody, I think, has to be flexible. To Abhi's point, you're not just going to kind of, you know, answer a bunch of check boxes and then, you know, like you're done. You know, to Bruce's point too, like you don't want to get into all the what ifs up front because you just need to have that solid foundation. So just as like we've taught with like kind of networking in the past, like you build your foundation and then you continue to add, you know, you have your house and you add the rooms and you're securing all those rooms, but you're kind of constantly always looking at it and adapting and being agile because, you know, the threats change all the time. You know, I think if the customers that I've seen that they approach it in that sort of agile way that we're all involved in it, we're all stakeholders ongoing. So if we get in early in the process and then we know now who the players are, who the people are, we continually kind of grow and build on that foundation.
I try not to oversimplify, but if I were kind of sum up a little bit of what I've heard you guys say so far, don't overdo it on the controls and policies and things that, especially that don't match, you know, I've been into customer situations before where, you know, we literally walk down a controls list and they're like, well, do you have PCI compliance in this solution? It's like, well, do you even need to do PCI? Is that even part of your,
right.
Well, no, we don't take any payments. So it's like, okay, well, we could probably de-emphasize that one a little bit, but you know, I think that, and then what I'm hearing is also, you know, having the right people in the room at the right time.
Yeah, that's okay. I mean, it's really about building consensus, you know, with the teams in the room and trying to build advocates for the solution that you're putting in place. Because there's people above that are going to have to approve and review, and different people in the org that's going to have to, you know, consulted or, you know, review it to approve it. But you have to build the advocacy within all the different orgs that are going to build this.
Right.
And part of the challenge with building that consensus is you have to challenge the customer sometimes. And that's kind of a point that you were making a little bit earlier, Bill, is, you know, sometimes the customer is has a viewpoint of their on-premises world where they have a fortress built on-premises where they have physical appliances, physical servers.
We have our own moat.
They're like, this is our moat. This is how we do it.
Do you guys have a moat around your data center? We do.
Right.
These projects are big. Like securing the cloud environment is a big ask, right? Because especially when there are so many hands in that, it's not same as securing your data center, right? Which you can put your arms around it. You can sleep. You can hug a server and you can sleep right beside it. That concept doesn't exist on the VM in cloud. And it's public cloud. So public is in the name. People often forget it. There is a reason why it's called public cloud. The thing that I wanted to highlight here is there is often in any of these big projects, there are going to be points where things are going to deviate from what you were thinking. And it's going to be important for you to go back to a statement and say, look, no, on such and such date, we took this decision. As a result of that, we took this design consideration. As a result of that, we selected this particular solution. And in order to do that, we selected this partner. So my point is, if you often the time you when you do these are people don't do the handshake agreements. Mm. Make them formal. Mm. Write it down. Put them on a website. Like put them on a Confluence and then open the Confluence up every single time and say, look, this is what we are doing. This is what we're building towards. Again, that's another thing that I see lacking.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many times I've sat in a meeting, probably part of a series, and somebody says, wait a minute, didn't we agree on this like 6 weeks ago? And you know what? It was said verbally, but it was never memorialized.
Right.
It was never written down. So I think in the security space, especially.
Yeah.
Not, you don't want to wing it.
Don't.
No.
Yeah.
And Bruce, I want to go back because you cut out a little bit, but you were saying, you know, customer has this physical base and, you know, they could have a moat, they could employ alligators. Like, you know, what's the thing to think about then when they're doing it, you know, sort of, or wanting to do something similar, thinking about that you were trying to make?
Yeah. I'd love to talk about that and tie it into what Abhi said earlier about public cloud, because those two go hand in hand. Because you have these customers that are thinking about a perimeter as a single space, a physical wall. And all I have to do is control this one boundary into, you know, where the drawbridge is over, across the moat. And that's it. And that works fine for on-premises, but in cloud, you have multiple entry points. You have traffic that's going over our public backbone to Office 365. You have traffic that's going over the public internet that's not our backbone. You have traffic coming in from ExpressRoute and VPNs and SD-WAN. You know, there's a much more complex and rich environment that's all based on our public cloud, our public IP addressable services within our cloud and our management layers. So when customers first hear this, they get a little bit skittish. They're like, oh my God, you know, we have to deal with an environment that's public, and we don't do that. We're, you know, everything must be private. So we have to walk them through that conversation about how is our backbone built? How is our data centers built? How are our regions built out? How is traffic controlled and policy based so that you can tackle that, you know, provide access control lists where certain things can't talk to other things, and you can still build this zero trust network environment, but you have to start thinking differently than how you do it on premise. And let us show you, you know, how our native tools do that within Azure. And customers start to open up and start to see that that traffic is still protected, even though it's a public cloud.
So I'll just add to that one. So the corollary to that one, because I'm like all about corollaries today, right? So
I like it.
The corollary to that one is trust. People still haven't bought into cloud, which amazes me at this point, right? Whether you like it or not, you are on cloud. It's not a choice anymore at this point. I often go into conversations where customers goes, well, I am on Azure, I use your services, and you can see my data, and then you want me to use your solutions to protect my data too, all eggs in the basket. So I'm not going to go with you, I'm going to go with this startup. Now, that startup, the whole valuation of the startup is like 1/10 of what we have committed in OpenAI, right? Like it just, right. Not even, it's leaps and bounds, right? I have more people in my team who are very specialized that work on these mega sophisticated environments, right? And requirements than there are engineers in the team, in the startup team. So it's not even a comparison anywhere. But this lack of trust leads to these weird decisions.
What's the attraction to the small startups? What is it that entices customers there?
So one of them is what I just mentioned, right? It's like, you know, I don't want to put all eggs in the basket. Like I'm not going to go with Azure. The next comparison to Azure would be like GCP or AWS. They don't have the same, it's not dig against them, but our stack is way more mature than anybody else's stack. Our security stack I'm talking about, right? So there is no native stuff out there that you can use as such. AWS has stuff for AWS, GCP has native stuff for GCP, only we have stuff for the other two as well. The next choice leaves is this other, and because remember cloud is new, you do not have like the legacy vendors producing stuff for cloud as such. Everybody's buying stuff, right? Cisco is buying stuff. Palo is buying stuff. Like if you look at Palo stack, is full. Palo started with a firewall, but then how did they go into container? They bought Twistlock. That gave them container side, right? And so these startups that work on a very focused problem, like that I'm just going to go on, look at container security and this aspect of container security. We are looking at that plus a whole slew of other things. So
yeah. Gotcha.
Do you know what I mean? So the difference is that these startups can be seen much more nimble, much more attractive, because they are seen as like the stalwarts of the next big thing.
So right. How do you position that to customers then? Because there are some positives of with a vendor who focuses on one thing.
You know, right,
they could do that really, really, really well.
I know. But think about playing a game, right? Think about, I don't know which game you want to play, baseball, cricket, which I can talk about a lot, but soccer.
All right, let's use cricket. That sounds like that's one of your favorites.
Let's say football, right? In a football, you cannot win the entire game based on the quarterback. I mean, people who love Patrick Mahomes will beg to differ. But if you leave Patrick Mahomes and you put like, another 20 of me around him, he's not going to win Super Bowl. He won't even win anything.
Right.
So my point is, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to play a game? Like, in other words, are you trying to solve the bigger problem? Or are you trying to solve one small thing, which is like, I want to find visibility in containers on this particular thing? Yes, startup is your answer. But most people are not looking for that. You're solving a container security problem, which is tied to a bigger problem, which lives on Azure, right? It's tied to the monitoring. It quickly spirals out into the ecosystem. Startups are not equipped for that. We are. So we again, are. What focus the forest, like focus the forest, or you want to see the tree?
Totally. Exactly.
Got a lot of good analogies there. In many cases, though, we also want to embrace our partners. So, do you think it's a good time to, you know, when we look outside of what Microsoft offers and look at our ecosystem?
Yeah, I mean, they want to get involved early mm-hmm. because they want the backside of doing the implementation and potentially building long-term and larger relationships with these customers. So they will typically highly discount the upfront design work. So leveraging those partners early on in that process to kind of help you drive not just the functional design of what you're trying to build in the architecture, but also enabling that POC, which kind of makes it real right there, right? You know, mm-hmm. all the things that we now talked about, will this work for my environment? And we strongly recommend customers start with the POC because that's where the automation build out starts. That's where, you know, the verification of trust or zero trust starts. That's where you start, the rubber starts meeting the road.
I was just going to say, now we're getting to the rubber. Yes.
Now, right. You start seeing all the different angles, like are all the pieces and parts here that we expect to be here? And that's where you can start expanding your scope profile to say, you know, did we meet all the criteria of what we set out to do? And that forms your baseline of how you're going to build your implementation.
Yeah. And to answer your question too, Shelley, I would say, another piece of to be just 100% transparent, we're Microsoft comes into these discussions partner agnostic. You know, we're open to partnering, we're open to doing that. What we like to point out is when those things aren't meeting what the customer, what their goals are, like that they talked about early on, right? Kind of setting your goals and the things that you want to do. And so if you're going to use a partner that's a niche partner that is a small startup and they're going to have a separate tenant, like we want to point that out to you because that might not meet your goal of what, you know, you want everything within your tenant or you want these things. We'll also point out our own shortcomings. You know, we're happy to, not happy, but we can talk about like, hey, we can't do this or this is where we're not there yet. We can point that out and we can tell you, you know, well, this is who we'd recommend, you know, that is best of breed. And this is how we'd recommend utilizing those things. And if that fits what you're looking for, then great. We want you to go that route. But a lot of times what happens is that I've seen is like niche, you know, really like a partner will come in or somebody will see an ad or they'll see something that's really specific and they'll be like, oh, we want to do that because it looks really cool. And it's the latest and greatest. And, you know, that's where we want to go. And all we're trying to do is to say, does it fit into that scope, right? If it fits into there, if you're going to make an exception, fine. But these are the considerations that, you know, you should have. But by the way, we can do X, Y, and Z. And, you know, here's where we've maybe not, you know, we're still growing or we're still improving or whatever to help them to make those decisions. So we're not saying like, you have to use everything Azure Native. It's the best of everything and you can't go wrong. That's not it at all. It's really just about making sure that when you make these decisions, you have all the things, it fits all things you should consider and it fits within, you know, your overall scope and your you know, the things that you want to do within your environment.
Yeah, I think it's totally true. And you know, that goes back to, you know, the earlier point of setting the guiding principle. If the guiding principle is Azure Native, then try and build out things in an Azure Native way. I think the thing that you hit on, which was really important, Kevin, was compliance and trust. We have an entire trust center built out that describes every single process, every single control, every single access point, how support can manage, like every single aspect of our platform and our native services. You know that, you know, if you're coming to Azure and you want to go Azure Native and, you know, you need these compliance rules, we've got you that. You know, we've got you. And if you're doing this with other partners, we're not saying they don't have them, but that may require more investigation. It may require more certification, more approvals, you know, a deeper dive look. So you really need to consider, you know, that aspect of your landscape when you're building this. Because that certification process can take forever.
That makes a lot of sense.
It's a great point.
Yeah. How much do you get to prove that out when, you know, when you're doing the POC? So you've got your requirement documents that you talked about before, making sure that you're documenting, and then you make it real with the POC. And how much does it typically change when once you get to that point?
To the POC, it doesn't change a lot. To production, it typically changes because the scope of the POC is, you know, the things that need to be tested, right? We're not testing out production, right? That's not the point of the POC. The point of the POC are the things that are up in the air that are not completely, you know, closed out from a compliance perspective or check the box or will this work and we're iffy about it. Those are the things that you want to POC. So those are the things that you bring forward into your design for production. And usually those pieces won't change, but your production environment will obviously be very different from the POC environment.
Well, Lord Lopez, guess what? We come up to the end of you guys' time. I was hoping you'd you might bring it home for us, but I mean, we went through controls, people, documentation, architectural points. You guys dove into so many very cool things. I think there's a lot of nuances. We could probably just continue to do podcasts where then we peel apart each one of those topics as well.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
How to avoid the moat.
Right. Avoiding the moat, the alligators, all that good
how
stuff.
How to swim in the moat.
Right.
Exactly.
I would just say thanks to you for putting this together. You guys are always so wonderful to work with and adaptable and giving us the opportunity to talk.
Sorry, just needed to give enough of a pause there. I didn't know.
Looks like we're still recording.
We are still recording. That's good. Well, no, actually, I still wanted to because I didn't know if the two of you wanted, if the three of us wanted to talk about how excited we are that we've been getting comments and write-in suggestions for the podcast.
I love it. I love it. Love it. Love it.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
Sally, you get.
It's amazing. I'm so glad. I'm glad that we are getting enough reach that people are tuning in and sending in ideas to us. I feel like one of those really super popular podcasts where they go, oh, we got an email from a listener and their story was so amazing. We had to bring them on and talk to them. So I think that's just great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we want more of that.
We do.
We know we have at least two listeners. So
yes, exactly. And it's not us.
It has been a grand total.
Besides us.
To suggest. But should say there's been comments. There's been, just other praises, lauds and things like that thrown upon us.
Yeah.
So much appreciated, much appreciating of the rates and reviews. So I think we're mostly people are listening on Apple Podcasts. So we really appreciate anybody that goes out there and gives us an honest review. And that honest review should be that this is a 5-star podcast.
But yes. Exactly.
And keep those ideas coming.
Exactly.
Keep the ideas coming. That's what we love.
Yes. Speaking objectively, this is a 5-star podcast.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
No. And anything less will hurt my feelings. Right. All right.
Totally
thank you very much. This was a fantastic episode. I'm looking forward to getting it out there. And happy International Women's Day.
Thank you.
Once again.
Thank you.
You guys.
All right. You guys.
You guys.
Bye.
All right. Cheers.
Bye.